Hello and welcome to Keanu Club, like a cool breeze over the mountains. This is episode 70, John Wick, chapter 2, from 2017. I'm Mike Manzi.
And I'm Joey Lewandowski, and with us today we have our John Wick expert, Mike Flynn. Hello, Mike.
How's it going, guys?
Good. So now before we get into this movie, which is the newest Keanu movie and what we thought was going to be the end of phase one of Keanu Club. Actually, you know what's genuinely amazing, Mike? I just realized this.
Huh.
For Cage phase one, we had 72 episodes.
No.
Now,
way.
For Keanu phase one, we're going to have 72 episodes. Because in the last week, since we last recorded, we found out that his movie To the Bone with Lily Collins, which I think played at Sundance this year, is coming to Netflix on July 14th. Which has already passed as you're listening to this. And also The Bad Batch, which we knew was going to be in theaters in June, also hit on demand on June 23rd. So that's available on Amazon, I think iTunes. So those two are going to be the last two. We're going to do The Bad Batch next week, and then we're going to do To the Bone. So we're going to, you know, this phase one of Keanu Club keeps getting a little bit longer, which is exciting.
It was just such a great surprise because the end here was really picking up steam with Keanu again, and like these projects were getting way interesting. So it's just really great that we got these two extra flicks, one of which I've seen and loved, so we'll get to that soon.
And I watched that last year, and I really liked it too, so we'll get to that next week after The Bad Batch, and then we're all patiently waiting for To the Bone, which is out now as you're listening to this. But the other bit of news that I wanted to bring about was that we've skipped a bunch of documentaries getting to this point. We didn't skip one here. We skipped, for now, a TV series from Europe called Swedish Dicks, which is a detective show set in L.A. starring Peter Stormare, who is in John Wick Chapter 2, which is perfect timing to talk about this. Season 1 came out a while ago, I think last year in Europe, and Season 2 either is out or coming out soon, but it just got picked up in the U.S. I think it's coming out later this summer, maybe? It might even be out by the time you're hearing this, but we're going to watch it and sort of decide if we want to cover it or not, but that'll be down the road a little bit. That'll be after To the Bone either way, so...
Yeah, and that might be like a special episode for the entire season one or however that works out.
Because it's like a half-hour comedy and Keanu is in 5 of the 10 episodes, I think. And I watched the pilot, what I could find, without subtitles, and he's only on screen for 3 seconds, but it's kind of awesome. So we will see if we cover that soon. Or at least, you know, we might mention it briefly at the beginning of another episode if we don't cover it in its entirety. But anyway, John Wick Chapter 2... A movie that Mike Flynn did not work on. Is that correct?
Correct. My brother-in-law actually did some work on it.
But, oh, wow. Keeping it in the family. So this movie... Oh, boy. Okay, so the other thing that I guess to discuss is... I think we've talked... I honestly don't remember if we've talked about it, because I know we've posted about it on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/cageclub, on Twitter at cageclubpod. We also have the website cageclub.me. I know we've posted about it. I'm not sure if we talked about it, but since we recorded... the first John Wick episode 6 weeks ago, they've announced that there is going to be a prequel TV series about the Continental Hotel. And Keanu may appear, he may not, or I think he's probably going to appear, but he's not going to be like the focal point of it.
He might check in for an afternoon or for a day.
Because I guess if it is a prequel, it would still be when he's active, I guess, because there's no reason for him to go to the Continental when he's retired, right? So, unless he's just hanging out with friends...
Yeah, it'd have to be a prequel from, like, 20 years ago, at least, right? While he was still on the job.
I wonder what that's going to be, but the reason I bring that up is because this movie kind of gives some insight into what that TV show would be, because this is an expanded Wickiverse. This is not just about John Wick's personal story, but this is about, you know, the Continental Hotel. We learn more about the hotel. We learn more about the people who work there. We learn more about, you know, this... web of assassins, and I really like this movie, and I love everything Keanu does in it, but I also realized I don't really care about the Continental if Keanu is not there.
Yeah, and I was surprised to find out that it's a chain of hotels all around the world, somewhat stocked with the same, you know, doppelgangers at each different place. You know, we've got Django in Italy instead.
Yes.
Franco Nero. But I hear what you're saying. Like, for me, I'm just going to say it up front. I love this movie, but I feel like it maybe bit off a little more than it should have in that it expanded too much too quickly. Like, to me, it just kind of felt like a lot of setup throughout the entire film all the way to the end. And then there's John Wick and what he's doing as well, which also feels like a little more than last movie. I feel like they maybe just are doing more than I want them to, but they're still pulling it off.
I agree with you. I think it's a classic action sequel in that it's more, it's bigger, it's badder, it's cooler, and they do that intentionally, but I don't think it's better. I don't think it quite has the simplicity that made the original film so brilliant and one of the best action movies of this era, if not the best.
You know what I was thinking, actually, that brings me to a point. It reminds me of other top tier, very top tier action movies from this era. This franchise reminds me of The Raid, in that the first one, this might be controversial, I don't want to get too far off of a tangent, but you guys can chime in on this if you want. I think the first Raid is better than The Raid 2, but both The Raid 2 and John Wick Chapter 2 kind of maybe have more action, but both franchises, and sort of all four movies, there is like this build up to action, and like once the action really gets going, it doesn't let you go, which I think is why all of them work so well. I just drew this comparison between the two of them. I think both John Wick, the first one, and The Raid Redemption are better than their sequels, but their sequels have a lot of great things going for them. They're just a little bit big, and it's not as pure of a story.
Yeah, I think like what Mike was saying, like they're definitely aware that they are a thing now and they want to sort of follow like the bigger, the sequel, you know, it's the sequel. We have to not just go bigger, like we got to go all out. This could even be our last one. We don't know. And the things that I like that they do are the moments, not necessarily the plot. I guess it's the plot that I'm struggling with more over anything else, but I do love how they sort of pumped up the color a lot. You know, it feels a lot more neon than the last movie to me. And I like how they go international, you know, and we get that. And I love the Common rivalry that he has with the actor Common in this movie with that character. So like, yeah, there's lots of great stuff in here. I just feel like I wish it fit together a little cleaner.
I agree with that not being cohesive. Granted, I think The Raid 2 is better than The Raid. I think it's one of the great crime films. But the thing about John Wick Chapter 2, both you guys are correct in that. It's sort of like, well, the first movie was a great success, so we have to go more than this. It's more colorful. You can tell the budget's been upped. But I felt like I was waiting for those big action beats. And I think the per capita on action and payoff is a lot more satisfying in the first movie. I also, and I think we'll touch on this later, I think that the villain is more just an annoyance in this movie.
He's kind of a bitch. Like, he just sort of sucks.
Yeah.
Like, when he gets killed, you're like, yeah.
The thing about, like, the action in here, I really felt like in the first movie, it developed his character more, right? Like, every action sequence sort of explained more about who John Wick was, what he's capable of, what he could do. And now that we know what he's capable of, it's really hard to make that a growth moment for him, really. They really are now just action spectacular action sets, which are great, which are awesome. But I'm not feeling, like, a lot of character growth over the course of this, really, which is unfortunate. Like, maybe they should have stayed small or tried to go even smaller with John Wick 2, which maybe they'll do for the third one, right? Like, maybe they'll just bring it all back and bring it smaller and downer for part three.
But I feel like that's not the trajectory that we're on. Like, we're going global now, even more so. So in terms of the budget and everything, the first movie had a budget of $20 million. It made 43 in America and 88 total. So big success. The second one doubled the budget to 40, made 92 domestic and 166 total. So they doubled the budget and they doubled the return. I don't think, again, they'll double the budget again, because I feel like this is a good place for this movie to be. Like, I don't know where you would have put more money. Maybe bigger set pieces, but, like, he's not a Mission Impossible type guy where he's, like, jumping out of planes and stuff. He's just shooting guys. And I feel like if they make it look great, but you don't have to use a lot of money to make that look good. Throw him in these tunnels, throw up some cool lighting, or, you know, that mirror, the museum in New York, like, that's amazing too. Come up with, like, creative ways. I don't think you need to put more money into it. So I don't see it getting a bigger budget, but I do think, unfortunately, or maybe fortunately, maybe there's a better one, a better story in mind, but like I think that we're going to go bigger for the third one.
Where I thought we were going with this was even more international. Like, we get to Rome, and I actually thought we were going to be there the whole movie, or maybe jet set somewhere else before, but we just end up back in New York. And maybe that's what they should do, is like make him the dark James Bond and have him globetrotting in the next movie, you know, avoiding all those like people that come in after him and stuff. I'd like to see him in Japan, and I'd like to see him, you know, in Sweden, or there's lots of places I'd love to see John Wick try and operate.
The possibilities are endless on that note. You can take him to Hong Kong. You can take him to the Alps. He's all-purpose, John Wick. He's tactical. Take him to England. And I'd love to see who they get for the head of the Continental in England. But I feel like John Wick Chapter 3, if and when they make it, the excommunicado thing has to carry over. Like, he's right on the run. There's no way they can't go global this time. Like, he's on the run. He's persona non grata in New York. He's got to be going all over the place. I'd love to see him go to Russia and start killing all of Viggo's other guys over
there. Well, he has an ally now in Viggo's brother, Stormare, the opening of this movie where he finally gets his car back. And guys, I didn't even realize at the end of the last movie he didn't get his car back. Like, that's, that's an amazing feat that film pulled off. Like, he didn't even accomplish his main objective, really.
And also, keep in mind that this movie takes place 4 days after the first one. So can you imagine that week in the life of John Wick? Like, his wife dies, then the entire first movie happens, and then he basically goes home to regroup, get to know his dog, and then this whole movie happens. And then the way that they're setting up the third one, like, it's not like he's gonna get a breather, like, he has an hour to get away. So this is like gonna be the worst week in history for a single person. All of this, you know, how many bodies is he gonna, like, you know, we're up near 300 kills probably between the two movies. So like, I feel bad for whoever he's gonna run into in the third one.
They'll deserve it.
Oh, absolutely.
That whole timeline thing I didn't really consider, and that's a really interesting point, because there's few sequels that manage to maintain momentum, let alone like just pick up right where they left off. And it's kind of interesting how this one does both. Like, I didn't realize it took place that close to the first movie. I thought for sure at least like a couple like weeks or a month had gone by.
I didn't realize that either.
Yeah.
You know.
So one thing that I do like about the possibility for the third one is something that we sort of see here that's never explicitly said in this one, but is sort of understood, is that he has this history. As we're talking about for the Continental TV series, he has this history, this career. It also makes me wonder how many places he has gold coins hidden, because he's got so many in his basement. He's got another, you know, couple dozen in that bank that he goes to. He's probably got gold coins all over the place. But because he's had this, such like this, you know, this storied career and everybody knows him, we can drop him anywhere and people are going to know him. Like, because he's bigger than life. He's the Baba Yaga. But like, it's not like he can ever be a new face somewhere, which I think is cool. Like, there's an assumed history there. Like in the first movie, when we're talking about the first movie, even before we see him do anything other than drive a car, we hear such horror stories and see the way people react to, like, oh, we don't know what he's done, but we know who he is. And so here, you know, for the third one, the whole world of assassins knows who he is, and we know that. And so wherever he goes, there's like this, like, it's an automatic rhythm that we're put into, which I think is why the Rome stuff works well, and why I think a lot of what could go on in the third movie would also work well.
And we get a little taste of that here in an awesome kill montage where, you know, there's an open contract on John Wick again. You know, there's that moment where he arrives back in New York City and, like, you see sort of like the sumo guy come after him. You see like the violinist come after him. You know, you see these people who are like represent diversity in the Assassin's Guild, and they're all coming after him. So it's really cool that like people almost treat him like a trophy at that point, right? So it'll be really interesting to see him worldwide, like who he can trust, who he will be aligned with, and what kind of mischief he's going to get into.
I like that you call it a kill montage. You don't even call it an action sequence. It's a kill montage. And my favorite part of that kill montage is when, and this is a payoff from the first one, because Viggo tells us that he saw John Wick do something unspeakable with a pencil. What happens?
And it's also, even before he does it in this movie, it's also teased again. And this time, which I think is kind of funny, is that because we've seen the first movie and we've already heard this story, the guy who's like hearing is just like, yeah, I know, with a pencil. And then
it's the best use of a pencil since The Dark Knight.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I almost thought in the first movie that was part of the joke, was like the Joker death in The Dark Knight was so cool, is like a tribute that to, he got that from John Wick, you know, hearing stories or something. And so now that we actually see it, it's like we talked about sometimes with certain songs that go into movies so well you can never use them again. Like, you can never kill someone with a pencil ever again in a movie now because of John Wick Chapter 2. He just does it to the max.
Well, he's now used 2 pencils in his life to kill a total of 5 people. So kind of a really high average and a really high bar to clear. But what's weird about this movie, I think, and maybe not weird, because I think it works for the most part, and it worked better for me the first time than this time, is the opening of the movie, there's like a 14-minute John Wick getting his car back montage. And 14 minutes into the movie, the credits come up. So it's a really long, extended cold open, even longer than the Raising Arizona one. But I mean, that movie is much shorter than this movie, so proportionally it's bigger. But anyway, 14 minutes of him driving around, doing all this cool stuff, car getting beat to hell.
Car foo.
Yeah. Yep. Only for Johnny Legs to say it'll be done by Christmas 2030. But then there's literally 40 minutes until there's action again. That there's cool stuff in between, like him at the Continental sort of getting, you know, his guns and his clothes. And once again, like we mentioned last time, this is the job that I want. I want to be like Peter Serafinowicz's assistant. Like, that's all I want. Like, in this universe, I just want to work with him, and that's all I want. But there's,
well, I thought 40... of Mike, yeah, when Mike said he wanted to work at the library, when John goes to Rome, there's like he goes to a library and like, or a bookstore, and the guy's got all like the blueprints and stuff. And it's like, oh, that would be Mike's job.
But there's 40 minutes of this movie where he doesn't do anything. And it reminded me of the first movie where, like, we see him driving early on, but then, you know, 30 minutes in, we get to that house scene. And then here, it's not until 55 minutes in. What I really liked, and I think this is something that, like, unless you really spend as much time as we do analyzing it, you might not realize. It's something you probably feel, but, like, as soon as the music starts playing in Rome, it's within a minute that gunfire starts. That, like, in this movie universe, music and really grisly deaths by gun are, like, intertwined beautifully. The music starts, and he's, like, sort of staring at Calm, and you're like, all right, like, here we go. And then, like, the movie sort of doesn't let up for the next hour, pretty much.
Yeah, well, they have to use that 40 minutes to sort of introduce the plot, really, is, you know, we have the Italian guy shows up. What's his name? Santino?
Santino. Little Saint, yes.
You know, there's no action, but it's all story. Like, Santino shows up and he says, you know, when you wanted out and you had to perform your impossible task, which we know about, big reference from first movie, John Wick's impossible task. This is the guy he went to for help.
No one gets out and comes back without repercussions. I do this with a heavy heart, John. But remember, if not for what I did on the night of your impossible task, you wouldn't be here right now like this. This is because of me. This, in part, is mine.
Take it back.
Take it back?
Take it back.
A marker is no small thing, John. For a man to grant a marker to another is to bind a soul to a blood oath.
Find someone else.
Listen to me. What is this? Hmm? Do you remember? This is your blood. You came to me. I helped you. If you don't do this, you know the consequences.
I'm not that guy anymore.
You are always that guy, John.
So, you know, we're expanding canon here. We're building the world a little more. And it does kind of take its time, you know. Maybe it takes a little too much of its time, but at least it ends with a big house explosion. Like, it knows that you've waited, you know, and, like, we've listened to these guys talk for, like, 2 scenes. So it's like, here's an explosion, at least, to hold you over until we get to the tunnels.
Yeah. I do agree with that. I mean, it's cool that you get to see the world building and everything, and you get introduced to accounts payable, which is a fucking great concept. I love that. I love how it's like an old-timey thing, like from Brazil, or like some, like, I remember a review comparing it to something out of a Wes Anderson movie, which I thought it was more Terry Gilliam, but it sets up really cool things. But, like, I thought the whole part with the sister was a little unnerving and a little too grisly.
Yeah, so we should mention, like, in order to be free again, John Wick essentially has to kill this guy's sister because, and here's some new stuff, she has a new seat at the high table, which is...
Right.
They're going to throw that around a lot in this movie. Like, I feel like this is almost like setting up S.H.I.E.L.D. for the next movie of their universe.
Yeah.
Do you think that there's any significance? I was trying to think of it. I don't know what it is. That the sister's name is Gianna, G-I-A-N-N-A, but like the feminine John. Is there any significance to a John being forced, sort of being forced to kill himself in a way?
I don't know. All that plays out very strange, you know? Like, she ends up committing suicide because she has controlled her own life, so she wants to control how she dies. But then he puts a bullet in her head anyway, and I'm not sure what he's thinking exactly.
I just thought it was a weird sequence, and I got what they were trying to do, and I get what they're trying to convey about her taking her own life instead of getting killed by the Baba Yaga, but it's creepy. It doesn't feel like something that you would see in that universe, but it does fit in with that like crazy neon acid tinged giallo hue to the film.
Yeah, I think what's weird is like we didn't get a moment like this in the first movie. Like the movie never really took any time to sort of quiet down and have a really strange character, and we're overseas now, so the customs are different and the world is different and everything is just different, and I feel like they're almost playing off Italian cinema, you know, not just with Franco Nero showing up, but like Mike said, like with the giallo stuff and the lighting and just her almost the way she's just like this powerful female mafia figure. Yeah, it's just very foreign. It's uncomfortable, it's eerie, but I still feel like it works enough. I wish it was cleaner. I wish it was more of like she maybe beat the shit out of John Wick and, like, you know, he just barely kills her, or like the brothers people show up and end up taking her out anyway.
But to that end, is there any way you see that woman being able to hold her own against John Wick?
Well, not necessarily, but maybe with a weapon or a sword, or she's proficient with a bow staff. I mean, I just wish that we had more time with her before she was taken out, because she's the target and she seems better than her brother, right? Like, it seems like John would want her to be running things over her brother in the first place, so I just wish we knew her more before she died.
What brought you back, John?
A marker.
Held by?
Your brother.
Tell me, John. This marker. Is it how you got out? And what was her name? This woman whose life has ended my own.
Helen.
Helen. This Helen. Was she worth the price that you now seek to pay? Now, let me tell you what happens when I die. Santino will lay claim to my seat at the table. He will take New York. And you will have been the one who gifted it to him.
I do wonder how much of this movie could have or was cut out, because it's already, I want to say, like 15 or 20 minutes longer than the first one. I don't know if it feels rushed, but it feels incomplete. Like, I think what you're saying, he sort of gets there and she's like, who sent you? And he says, your brother. She's like, all right, I'm going to kill myself now. And then, like, we see that she and Common have this bond that's sort of more than just protectee protector, right? It seems, I don't know if it's a love thing or it seems deeper, but we don't really see him grieve over her either. So I wonder if there's just stuff that they trimmed down here just because the action has begun or is about to begin or whatever, and we can't spend another 5 or 10 minutes of talking or mourning.
Did the Blu-ray have deleted scenes on it?
There are deleted scenes.
Yeah, I didn't watch those either, but they're not in the movie, right? Like, I have a feeling that you're right, that they just took a look at the final cut and were like, we got to get to the action. Like, we're going to think this is cool, and there's going to be a part of the audience that likes the mythology we're building here, but most people just want to see John Wick shoot people in the head, like, four or five times, you know?
That's kind of the point of John Wick.
I think why the sequence over here works once it gets going is because they pretty perfectly cast a couple people as sort of, not head villains, but sort of, you know, that next tier down. That Common is great.
They're like the hitmen of Rome in the way I feel like John and the girl from the first one that we saw. And like
Adrian Palicki, yeah.
Yeah, and right. His guardian angel that was kind of following him around at the same, Willem Dafoe, right?
Yeah.
These
Marcus.
Are their doppelgangers in a way. Like, right. We have a new girl and a new guy.
Because Common is great, and Ruby Rose is great. And Ruby Rose has now been in 3 sequels this year. I've seen 2 of them. She's in this, she's in Resident Evil The Final Chapter, and she was in XXX The Return of Xander Cage. So
I saw all 3 in theaters.
She is a real action... I guess she's becoming an action star, sort of. Even though she doesn't talk in this, she just sort of, you know, she's mute, or she, you know, she signs to him.
That was perfect. Like, not only is it, like, this really threatening woman, but she's mute, and she's going to threaten you with sign language, and it's going to be scary.
She's awesome. And I saw the XXX Return of Xander Cage, and she made an impression on me in that. I thought she was one of the better parts of the movie. But then I saw her in this, I'm like, she's got to have a career.
She's also on, I first saw her on Orange is the New Black. She was in either last year or 2 years ago. She's in a handful of episodes. She's like an Australian model, I think, turned actress, because she's beautiful.
Yes.
And she's also a cool action star. I mean, she's good in this. I like her a lot also in XXX, that she's, you know, this great sniper. She's funnier there, because that whole movie is funnier. So I like that she can sort of play the funny action stuff and also, like, the serious, scary action stuff like she does here. And whatever she does in Resident Evil, I don't know.
She's basically, yeah, a tough-ass chick all around.
Yeah, I feel like she'll end up getting typecast and that sort of thing. And look, she starred in the Roger Moore James Bond riff, and then she did the Timothy Dalton James Bond riff.
Well, I feel like this shows that she has abilities, though. Like, just, you know, the idea that she doesn't talk throughout the whole movie. I mean, how many actors in general would say, you know what, I don't want any dialogue, you know, like, but no, like, that's like a challenge accepted for this person, you know, and I feel like she really does a good job of it, like, almost immediately, before it was even implied that she was mute, and I mean, I might have picked it up from the trailer, but I mean, you could just tell there's something up with this person, that there's something a little off with her, and then you find out, oh, she doesn't talk, she's like a silent assassin, like, that's awesome.
It's very similar to... And granted, these examples were ones where they ended up cutting most of the dialogue from the script or from the film. Stallone in First Blood, they cut 80% of his dialogue out of the movie. And recently in Sicario, Benicio del Toro's character Alejandro, like 90% of his backstory was cut. And it made his performance so much better, so much cooler, so much more atmospheric.
I mean, even going back to guys like Jason Voorhees, you know, or Michael Myers, right? Like, just silent killers are more threatening, you know?
There's a stronger fear of the unknown.
Yeah, because, I mean, it's always scarier what your mind assigns to it, right? That, like, you don't know, like, if she is choosing not to talk, or if she's paying penance for something, or maybe her tongue was cut out. You know what I mean? Like, who knows what the backstory is there, but whatever it is, it's cooler and more mysterious than actually knowing the truth.
Now, about Common, like, granted, he's, like, you know, 10 years younger than John or Keanu, or at least that's how I look at it, because the actors, I think, are that far apart in age, but he seemed to me to really be holding his own against John Wick, and I almost thought, like, this is going to be, like, the new and improved, not improved necessarily, but, like, the new model. Like, Common is now, maybe not the boogeyman yet, but give him 20 years, he doesn't look like he's ever going to want to get out. I'm impressed pretty much with these guys. Like, they are really kicking ass together.
It's like Wolverine and Sabretooth, or Batman and Deathstroke.
Right. Yeah, like mirror images of each other.
Right. And it's funny, I like that when Keanu Reeves and Common meet, it starts out as a shootout, and then it turns into this They Live-esque, never-ending fist fight through the streets of Rome.
They keep running into each other.
With no music.
much like They Live.
It's just like all you hear is like they're grunting and they're kicking and stuff. Like it's somehow like gritty and flashy at the same time. Like it's both and it works.
Because I think both dudes are just so cool and look cool when they're fighting in their suits and they just don't care. Like, they'll just start shooting at each other in a crowded dance hall or on, you know, the PATH train in New York City. They'll just start a knife fight with each other. I almost wish they had, like, a third encounter to kind of, like, you know, make it a little more rounded out or anything. But it is great when they see each other and he's like, "You working tonight?" And he's like, "Yep. How's that going?"
Cassian. Working?
Yeah. You?
Yeah. Good night.
Afraid so.
I'm sorry to hear that.
What I also like about the John Wick Common relationship is that there's a respect there that isn't there for Ruby Rose. And it's the same respect that Keanu paid to, drumroll please, the Bowery King, Lawrence Fishburne, back from the Matrix movies. So in this movie, we hear the story from Morpheus himself saying that John Wick gave him a gift or whatever, that he stabbed him and said, "You can either kill me and die yourself or hold your hand there and go get attention, go get help." And so, again, the same thing here, that he stabs Common in the aorta, and essentially it's a finishing blow, but like is going to let him get to the doctor. And then Ruby Rose, he stabs her in the exact same place and pulls the knife out because, like, there's not a respect there. Like, I don't know if there's, like, not just a shared history or if there's more to it that we didn't see, but, like, there's this history, this unspoken bond of sorts between Keanu and Common that we get in that, like, two-sentence description or two-sentence story from Lawrence Fishburne.
"You're not very good at retiring."
"I'm working on it."
"Mr. Wick doesn't remember, but we met many years ago, before my ascension. When I was just a pawn in the game, we met and you gave me a gift. The gift that would make me a king. You don't remember, but there I was standing in an alleyway. I didn't even hear you coming.
You gave me this. Gift from the boogeyman. Perfect for every occasion. But you also gave me a choice. Pull my gun, shoot you in the back and die, or keep the pressure on my neck and live. And so you see, I survive. No one sneaks up on me anymore, thanks to you. I am all seeing, all knowing."
I think it kind of, you kind of trace it back to the heroic bloodshed films from Hong Kong. It's kind of something you find rooted in Japanese history during feudal times with samurai. It's like a code.
Yeah, like, there's like an honor among thieves too, right?
Yeah.
Like, that as well. I mean, there's rules to this. I mean, we are civilized killers after all. But I do love that I was not expecting that moment, you know, when he stabs Common in the chest and leaves him sitting there on the subway. Second time around watching it, when the subway doors close and you see the look on Common's face, it's like, this ain't over, bitch. It was just the best fucking look on his face. You're like, oh, of course he's going to survive this. Like, the guy is, like, basically a Terminator.
He's going to come back in part three with a cyborg eye. Just watch. I'm hoping that the franchise does get to a point where we have cyborgs involved.
What I like about that moment, what I like actually about a lot of this, is that friend of the show and host of Now and Again, Chris Mattiello, when he was talking about this movie, he said that this movie gives John Wick infinite ammo and God mode abilities and just sort of lets him go to town. It's true to an extent because that's who John Wick is, but what I like about the Common thing, the fact that he almost dies, or the fact that there's, like, one of the coolest things in the movie that I don't think I saw the first time, is that after he's battling Common the first time, right after Gianna kills herself, he goes in the tunnel and, you know, he has, like, first battle with the wave of Ruby Rose's henchmen. He, like, catches a breather around the corner and, like, slaps his chest, and then just bullets just fall from him. So, like, he's not indestructible. He's just prepared. He got shot a lot. Like, he got shot like 10 or 12 times. And we find out from the tailor in the Continental that it is bulletproof, that they sew it in the lining, but it hurts a lot. So yeah, it's sort of kind of God mode-ish, but it's more a preparation. It's a guy who's been doing this for 30 years. It's a guy who, like, knows how to protect himself. Like, in that same sequence, he then, like, holds his jacket up in front of his face to sort of act as, like, a shield. And I don't think I caught that the first time either. I'm like, whoa, like, that's super cool. And so, yeah, like, John Wick is sort of, like, playing with, you know, cheat codes. But at the same time, he's not really, because he gets shot a lot. He gets shot and, like, actually gets gut shot. I mean, he gets stabbed in this movie. He takes a lot of beatings. He just is more experienced and still, like, hasn't had that decline in ability that, you know, another older guy might have experienced, you know?
Yeah, and I think a lot of it, too, is the instinct that he has. I mean, you know, we got to remember keeping the timeline in our heads, like, he just got back into the game, like, 3 days ago or 5 days ago. And, like, granted, the last movie, what, that was, like, a warm-up for him, you know? That was, like, a two-and-a-half-day murder spree that he just went through. So maybe now he's just, like, you know, he's like all warmed up. He's like ready to play another round. He's like, put me in, coach. And so he's just got like the adrenaline pumping, the instinct rocking. And yeah, like he's John Wick. So like he knows how to do everything best in the first place. So it's those little moments like when he holds his coat up as a shield that reminds you like, oh, that's clever. You know, like that's good writing. That's smart. And that's utilizing stuff. And that's showing that this is, you know, he's not the only character wearing these clothes, but you don't see anyone else doing that.
You know, the first one was him running up the Philly Art Museum steps. The second one is him fighting Apollo Creed. And then the third one's going to be Drago. They're going to skip Clubber Lang. Because Common is Clubber Lang.
What movie was it we just saw? Oh, Cars 3 is basically all of the Rocky movies. And so now John Wick is also now all of the Rocky movies. I like it.
Even Rocky 5 is
it? I think it dips into, it dips there for a minute where they talk about, like, fathers and sons, absolutely.
And there's a part where, like, just, you know, Lightning McQueen's not really racing anymore, so that's sort of like, you know, Rocky not really fighting anymore.
He doesn't get brain damaged or go bankrupt.
Well.
That's the Rocky story I'm talking about.
No, but Cars 3, in all seriousness, is kind of like Rocky 1 and Rocky 4 and Creed, and probably parts of other ones rolled into one. There's no Coma, so maybe it's not Rocky 2, but it's a lot of the other ones.
Is there Russians?
There is in the second. It's international, I think, but
that's true.
Yeah. We're getting off track.
So, yeah, so let's talk about Lawrence Fishburne for the fact that, like, they made such a big deal about this in the trailers and in the promotional stuff leading up to the movie. He's on screen for less than 10 minutes, but, like, just like the rest of this world, there's this history there. There's this understanding of who this guy is. He knows John Wick. There's this bond of sorts, this, like, you can't tell if they actually like each other or they hate each other, or they're just sort of mutually beneficial to one another in a sense.
Yeah, there's, again, it's kind of that honor among thieves that Mike's talking about, with, like, that you owe me, so we're gonna get, I'm gonna give you this 45, which has half the capacity of the 9mm you use, but it's got more stopping power, and we're gonna give you a little head start.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's great because Lawrence Fishburne is all presence in this movie. And we're at a point in the movie now where we've seen a couple strange hitmen, a couple weird characters, you know, like I say, like he did the kill montage. That's actually how he gets to Lawrence Fishburne. Like after fighting like four guys in a row, he actually needs to try and hide from one of them. So he gives a gold coin to a homeless kid who hides him and brings him to Lawrence Fishburne. And he is the weirdest, strangest character in the John Wick universe so far, and I think we needed to wait to this point to meet him, and I don't think he disappoints either, and it's a real window into where they could go in the third as well. Like when he goes overseas, like you could just have like guys into the weirdest shit.
Please Carrie Ann Moss, please.
Well, there you go, too. Yeah, Hugo Weaving. That would be great. Like, bring everybody from The Matrix into this universe
if you have to. Let's not limit this to just The Matrix. Let's get, we can't get Dennis Hopper.
We get the ghost of Patrick Swayze.
Sandra Bullock could show up from L.A. as an assassin. That would be cool.
William Sadler.
Olivia Diabo from Flying.
We might be going a little too far now.
Ice-T.
Just make it a really like going away party for John Wick.
His funeral, if we get to that, if that's where they take it, like just have everyone he ever co-starred with show up for the end of it.
So there's a lot of things, like in the IMDb trivia, there are a lot of things written that I'm not sure exactly how really close they are, but, you know, they say that once Lawrence Fishburne shows up, there's a lot of reds and blues, like, you know, the red pill, blue pill. There's cell phones and there's glasses that are similar to them, to the ones like he wore and they used in the Matrix movie.
That is true.
I didn't pick up on any of that. Subliminal.
There's a bunch of other stuff. There's a lot of biblical references because there's talk of the Pope. Like, somebody asked John Wick if he's in Rome to kill the Pope, and he's just like, no.
Oh, yes. Yeah. When he goes to the Continental, that's what, yeah. Franco Nero, he's like, let me just ask you one thing. Yes, he's going to kill the Pope. And John Wick's like, why would I want to kill the Pope? And he's like, oh, thank God. Okay, anything else goes, I guess.
I fail to recall the last time you were in Rome. And here I'd heard you had retired.
I had.
Then humor me with but one question. Sei qui per il Santo Padre?
No.
All right, then. One of our finest rooms.
Oh, Lawrence Fishburne asks him, or, you know, says he's about to take his descent into hell. He fights through Club Hell and Matrix Revolutions. So there's a lot of, like, things that feel sort of tied, not just to the Matrix, but to Keanu's career as a whole. There's also a really cool line that someone says, Winston, played by Ian McShane, another HBO connection to the John Wickiverse, says that Santino stabbed the devil in the back, and the devil being Keanu. So that is super cool and super badass, and sort of, you know, reminiscent of a lot of things. Constantine, which also featured Peter Stormare.
Does it say anything in there on Lawrence Fishburne getting inspiration from Mike Tyson with the pigeons and everything? Like, because they're doing a cool thing where they're swapping out, you know, in olden days you'd put a little note on a pigeon, but they're using, like, computer chip. But, like, honestly, like, I thought for sure, like, he is doing some Mike Tyson something here.
Well, there's also, I mean, if you're listening, go watch Mike Tyson Mysteries, which is amazing. And there's all pigeons in that, too. And there's also a pigeon voiced by Norm Macdonald. So pigeons and Mike Tyson have a storied history. I don't know. I didn't see anything about Mike Tyson here. It also gave me kind of a Ghost Dog Way of the Samurai sort of vibe.
Yeah.
Right?
The rooftop thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. And the getup is very Ghost Dog.
Right. Like that sort of homeless
right.
drab that they were. I love that gag, though, like the idea that they're not really homeless people in New York, that they're all in a secret, intricate web of informants for Lawrence Fishburne, who is the Bowery King.
Right.
Yeah, they're like Varys's little birds.
Right.
So here's a question for you guys. So we find out at the end of this movie that, okay, so take a step back, because the plot is straightforward, but also somehow confusing, because everything that the plot is about is new to this movie. So there is the high table, and Santino wants John Wick to kill his sister because their father gave her the seat and he wants the seat. And so we find out that John Wick, to retire, asked Santino for a favor. So Santino had a marker, which means that, like, basically, I'll do a favor for you and you do a favor for me, right? Like, that's how a marker works. And so he helps John Wick retire, but then he's like, hey, you need to kill my sister. The marker needs to be closed. John Wick kills his sister, or his sister kills herself. She's dead, whatever. He takes a seat at the high table, but then puts out a $7 million hit on John Wick, which we mentioned earlier, and that's where all of the assassins come after him. Like Mike was saying earlier, you know, the sumo guy, the violin woman, all that's different stuff. At the end of the movie, when we said that Ian McShane, you know, says he's excommunicado, and not the high table, but, like, the family, right, of Gianna has doubled the bounty to be $14 million. And we find out that everyone in this New York park is an assassin, because they're all, like, they all listen to this word, and they all look at him, right? So this
it's
is something
ridiculous.
We mentioned. This is a very long ramp-up to get to a specific question. In the first movie, when there's the shootout at his house, and Jimmy the cop, who makes a return here, shows up, he's the only cop that we see. We find out here that maybe everyone in New York, or at least an overwhelming number of people in New York, are assassins. Are we to believe that everyone is an assassin? Or, like, is everybody at that party in Rome, they just seem like normal people?
Yeah, no, because that's like the party in the first one, the club from the first movie. I don't feel like that was an assassins only dance club. But this is, I just feel like they needed to streamline all this. There's a little too much going on. I feel like they wanted us to see a little too deep into the world a little too soon, because I didn't get the sense necessarily that they were all assassins, but just that they worked at the Continental or for Ian McShane, or he had just, you know, assembled them to prove a point that, you know, he has power and, you know, that he grants John Wick the hour before the excommunicado actually goes into effect. So therefore, just saying, like, as a friend, I'm giving you a head start, but also at the same time saying, like, you're in some deep shit because, you know, this world is taking all of what you did very seriously, even if it's not, like, entirely your fault. You are to blame.
I feel like the relationship between Winston and Wick is like the favorite student of Winston, who's this professor, mentor, teacher, and he's doing this as a favor. He's like, he's doing him a solid because he likes him enough and respects him enough. And even though Wick does not give a fuck when he shoots Santino in the head, I love that part. He just doesn't give a shit what's going on. He just walks a bang.
Well, because we find out, real quick to interrupt, there's two rules. No killing at the Continental, and all markers must be honored. And so Santino, like the bitch that he is, goes and hides out of the Continental. He's just like, hey, like, look at this menu. See how many food options there are? I could just never leave here. And then Keanu's just like, or whatever, and just shoots him. So that's how he gets excommunicado. But go ahead, Mike.
No, I was going to say that moment, it was like something out of Steven Seagal movie. It's very one-sided.
Yes.
Like, even more than the Vigo fight. It literally, he's sitting there. He's like, oh, the duck fat is so good. And then Keanu Reeves is like, oh, fuck that. I don't want to eat any of this food. And he's just, bang, suddenly shot, like, in the middle of the sentence.
I was watching this movie with subtitles, as I do most of the times I'm rewatching a movie for Keanu Club. And the subtitle just says, like, walk a dash. Like, he doesn't even get, like, walk away as a full subtitle. He just gets shot in the middle. That reminded me, and there's another time earlier in this movie where Keanu is, like, on the ground and a big guy is coming at him and he shoots him in both kneecaps. That reminded me of, like, Raiders of the Lost Ark, which is another era.
Yes, I thought the same thing.
Yes.
Where the guy has all the swords, you know, and he just has a whip, and then he just pulls out the gun. Like, it's, you know, famously that Harrison Ford had, you know, diarrhea or whatever, dysentery on that day, and needed to go to the bathroom. He couldn't do this, like, choreographed scene. But that, it just reminded me that John Wick is, like, there's very few people in the history of movies that are as cool as Indiana Jones, and dare I say that John Wick might be one of them.
Quite perhaps. I mean, you know, it's interesting, that whole stuff with the Continental, like, him and Common fight to the point where they, like, bust through the Continental's front door and are reminded they need to stop, and they do take a break and they kind of chill out at the bar and they buy each other a drink and they're like, okay, next time. But then when he goes in to get this weasel, Santino, right? Like, shoots him mid-sentence right in front of the fucking owner, you know? Like, that is just like, I don't give a shit. Like, this guy deserves it. And I think that is part of the point. I think John Wick was like, he doesn't deserve his seat, right? And maybe E. McShane might have taken some of what he saw into consideration. But I also love how he's just like, Jonathan.
Well, yeah, he knows he can sort of bend the rules but not break the rules for his favorite student.
Right, or else he would have, instead of getting a 1 hour head start, there would have been a circle of people shooting him at night, and, you know, like in the first movie.
He would have inadvertently gotten Winston killed. Like, it would have been some kind of, like, chain reaction.
I wonder, I like what you said about that whole, like, John being the favorite son of some kind. I mean, it's probably too far to think that that is John's father, right? Like, we don't want to think that, or do you think that they'll even go there?
I don't know.
What do you guys think?
So here's something, it's not exactly an answer to that question, but I was reading that the director and the writer gave in an interview to Screen Junkies. They had a lot of ideas for what this movie could have been about, and this is the one they wound up with, you know, the high table and the marker and everything. But they were tossing around ideas about another love of Keanu's, or, like, Keanu going after a daughter. And I was like, we don't know anything about his family. And, like, we barely know about Helen, his wife. We just know that she's dead and that he loved her and that he retired for her. But, like, outside of that, we know nothing about his family. So, like, it's conceivable that Ian McShane is his father. But, like, Like, it could go either way, and, like, I don't think ultimately it matters, because he's sort of acting like one,
right,
whether
anyway,
he is or not.
Yeah, he's filling that role, right, intentionally, whether it's biological or not. That is the role he's playing there. Why complicate the matters? But it would be cool to see, like, if, in fact, everyone on the planet is an assassin, and he does have, like, some siblings, like, what would his brother and sister be like? Are they good or bad? You know, like, is he going to tussle with them in the third one? Does he ask his mom for help?
I think that would be pushing into like very ridiculous territory. I mean, it's one thing to have Jason Statham be revealed as the brother of the bad guy in a Fast and the Furious movie, and then a movie later you find out that Helen Mirren is his mother.
I love it though, but you're right. It does feel more like a part five or six idea as opposed to just like a part three or like cleanly closing out a trilogy.
Actually, while you mentioned Fast and the Furious, I think it's funny, I mean, again, going back to the time between movies, I think it's funny that the dog does not have a name. The dog spends most of the movie with Lance Reddick. I was thinking, because, you know, at the end of Fate of the Furious, slight spoilers for the end of Fate of the Furious, that there's a baby, and they name the baby Brian, which is weird, because in that world, Brian O'Connor's not dead. He's just retired. So it's like they want to name the baby Paul Walker, but they didn't name the baby, whatever. So I wonder if in John Wick 3, we're going to find out the dog's name?
What was the dog in the first one?
Lily.
Okay, it would be cool if this one had like the name of a flower also, even though it's like a much like meaner-looking
dog. It's a boy dog too, right.
Mm-hmm. But it could still be funny. They should call him Baba.
Call him what? Baba?
Yeah. Just Boogie.
Baba.
I wonder, because, like, you know, if the Fate of the Furious writers were writing this, it also wouldn't be as cool, because, like, this is super... I mean, not that Fate of the Furious is not cool, but it would have been a little bit cornier, and, like, the dog would have been, like, Helen. You know what I mean? Like, it would have been, like, that's... But I don't know what the dog... I mean, maybe the dog doesn't really have a name. I don't know.
Yeah, I guess
that's... calls him Dog.
Dog and good dog, yeah.
Yeah.
It's what gives the dog its character this time around. Like, I feel like the first time around, the dog was the charm from the dead wife, like, right, like, symbolized the dead wife and that relationship. The dog this time around, like, what is it, like, really? It's just kind of, like, just kind of there. It doesn't really, I don't know what it's really doing there. It's just more to say, like, John Wick needs to have a dog because, like, he grew attached to the idea of, like, having a dog. I'm not sure, but, I mean, I love the dog. It's a cute dog. I just wish he was in more of the movie if they were going to have him in the movie. You know, he takes him for two really long walks. He walks basically from New Jersey to Brooklyn twice with this poor dog.
Well, the dog is there because it's a nice button on the first movie, and then you can't just not have the dog in the second movie.
True. One character they didn't bring back I was keeping an eye out for was the bartending girl from the first movie. I thought for sure, like, if everyone was going to show up, that she would pop in, but no. It would have been cool if she, like, got even promoted to accounts receivable or something.
Okay, so can we talk about that room of accountants, the accounts payable? Like, I'm obsessed with them. Like, all, like, moderately to really attractive women in the same pink shirt, all tattooed. Like, they're all of their left arms, like, fully tattooed. I don't know what's going on there, but it's fascinating.
They're all wearing, like, diner outfits, right?
Yeah.
Like, diner waitress outfits with, full tattoo sleeves. And like Mike said earlier, it's totally out of that accounting scene in Brazil where there's just, like, old-fashioned machinery that they're doing calculations on and, like, typewriters, and everything is just analog in that room, you know? It's all just, like, a paper trail. It's great.
It's like a late 80s Madonna video.
That's like, true. You could almost see him typing in, like, to a beat, right? Like, they're all typing together in synchronization.
Yeah.
That would also be another good job to have, just to be, like, their supervisor, because they all seem really good at what they do, so I feel like it'd be not a lot of stress, and just, like, hang out with, like, what seems to be the coolest room of women, because, like, there's not a lot of women in these movies. Like, there's Adrian Palicki in the first one, there's Ruby Rose in the second one, there's the spirit of Helen, there's the bartender, like you were just saying, but, like, most of it's just, like, dudes shooting each other, and here you have a room full of probably really cool women. Like, let's just hang out there.
Yeah, I mean, maybe that's where they'll go with the TV show deeper, right? Like, there's so much here, I feel like, even though to a degree maybe I'm overloaded, like, they have set up whatever they need to taking it forward, right? Like, there is more than enough sort of fruit on the tree now, whether it's the High Table or all the different continentals around the world, or, like, you know, what else is out there when you call, like, we didn't see the cleaners show up in this movie, but they were in the first one, right? So, like, there's all these different jobs that we still don't know about. It was really cool seeing him go to, like, get his guns this time and talk about, like, you know, dessert and all that, and, you know, the quartermaster just getting, like, really excited about showing him weapons and everything. And so, like, yeah, they really have done a good job of setting up the next movie. I just wish it didn't take this much time away from this movie.
Yeah. I thought David Patrick Kelly was going to come back for this one. I think he was listed on IMDb when it was being made. I guess he had conflicts with Twin Peaks.
Speaking of things that we didn't see but maybe could have seen, and this is a really roundabout way to get back to what I want to talk about. In the beginning of the movie, that 14-minute cold open, Peter Stormare's at his desk just sort of chomping on a cigar or whatever, and John Wick is going around the garage, killing people, you know, shooting people, crashing the people. We cut back a couple times to just Peter Stormare, like, listening. I kind of want, like, a 14-minute version of him just, like, reacting to the sounds he hears, because I understand that, like, it was so beautiful because there's only a couple times. I want a full, like, I can't, like, trying to piece together what he's doing.
You want the whole, just the whole take of that, right? It's just,
yes.
the one long tape of, yep, that they got of him reacting to what's going on down there, and just play that, and then maybe once or twice cut to John Wick. And
okay,
then
just, now you hear a really big car crash. Okay, now you hear a guy shout, and then you hear three bullets. And now you hear, like, five bullets, and now you hear breaking bones.
Right, now someone just got, like, run over by a car. Now someone got flipped over by a car. Now someone got hit by a car.
And, you know, I thought they were, I really wanted them to kind of pull a Hans Gruber, Simon Gruber thing with this series and introduce Viggo's brother as, like, the evil younger brother. But they did it, and they subverted it where, for whatever reason, this guy is, like, a good guy. I think he'll get killed off in the next one, though.
I think Viggo is the evil brother. Like, Stormare's, like, considered the nice one, I guess, or the reasonable one. Well, Viggo also was, like, he knew better than to fuck with John Wick. It was just his idiot son that started all,
yep,
that bullshit.
Right.
So I bet if he could, he would have tried to squash it. And this guy, Stormare, just knows better, and he's just like, John, whatever you want, just peace. If peace is what you want, that's amazing. I'll stick to that. It's a truce.
There's a couple of really cool kills that we haven't talked about, I don't think. One thing is that there's a guy that John Wick holds a shotgun to and, like, pins him against the wall while he reloads the shotgun and then kills him with it.
Yep.
Which is amazing.
That was sort of like a playoff of the first one where he kind of, like, pins a guy to the wall while he reloads and then shoots him again.
And another really cool one, or sort of an expanded version of how he kills Ruby Rose, he stabs her through the hand and then stabs her hand with the knife into her heart, which is just amazing.
It's elaborate.
That was awesome. I don't know. There's just something always about, like, the instinct of putting your hand up in front of your face and then, like, a knife going through it. It's like it happened in Mad Max with an arrow, I think. And, like, I just feel like that's really cool all the time. It's just like, oh, it's a close call, but I'm still really injured here.
There's one other kill that I really remember, and it was at the end when they're in that, you know, the museum, and they're, like, that hall of mirrors, and he sees a guy, and he's not sure where the guy is, so he shoots twice and gauges how that is in relation to the guy, and then puts one bullet through the guy's head, like, through a wall, which is just super cool, I think.
Yeah.
Are there any others any other really notable ones that we haven't talked about that I can't remember?
I'll tell you one that I love is when he runs out of ammo and he just throws the gun at the guy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was cool.
Like, that's how desperate he is that he wants to kill people. He runs out of ammo, so he just throws the gun at somebody and picks up another gun.
Everything can be a weapon to this guy. I like the moment, I think it was in the garage sequence in the beginning, where his car's missing a door. The car gets hit and he, like, falls out of his car. Did that happen?
Oh, well, I don't remember that. I mean, I don't want to, you know, I don't doubt that it happened. But the way that he lost that door is that there's the motorcycle guy chasing him, and he opens his door and then slams on the brakes, and the motorcycle guy, like, rams into his door, knocks the door off the car, and the motorcycle guy goes tumbling over. So it's all just super cool when he's in that car.
There's a moment early in the first Common fight, when they're in Rome, where you know, like, that they're pretty close close to each other's strengths is when they go down like that extremely comically long flight of stairs together, and they just keep like grabbing it, like they're holding each other most of the time, and when they re-grab each other, they're just like throwing themselves again with the momentum so that they go all the way down this stone staircase, and then they have like a crazy knife fight after that. So
it's interesting that you bring those two things up, Mike, because Keanu did about 95% of what you see in this movie. The only things he didn't do were that stair sequence and when he got hit in the car. So everything else is Keanu. And I mean, we even see, you know, there was a video that came out, I think early this year or late last year, of him doing that gun training prepping for this movie, where it's like this guy, the actor Keanu Reeves, knows what he's doing. He also spent, and this is another thing, sort of relation thing to the Matrix, he spent 3 months training, mostly doing judo, Brazilian jiu-jitsu, marksmanship, and driving. And like, it pays off because he looks great at all of them.
He's very convincing.
What I did notice this time is like the fights are just really well shot again. Like, there's a lot of long takes, there's not a lot of coverage, and it really helps. And you just feel them, like, you feel that they're tired at times, that they're just like, you know, punch, 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 like, stop, the camera stops, it's not even cutting, and then they keep punching each other again, and they just, like, explode back into action. I'm just really glad that they kept the aesthetic from the first one, as far as, like, the filming rules and everything, not a lot of that wacky handheld stuff going on here.
So the body count for this movie is 116, which is, I think, more than the first movie. So that's, I think, more. I think the first movie was about 80-ish.
And we're just talking about Wick kills, right?
Not well, this has body total. Count, but like, I can't think of too many people who died who he didn't kill.
Or at least, like, shoot after they died.
Right. So a weird thing is that Entertainment One, which is the Australian distributor, was going to put this out straight to DVD, which seems surprising. And then so many people blew up their Facebook and Twitter and, like, contact on their website that they're like, all right, fine, we'll put it in theaters. It seems weird that after because the first movie, like you were saying on the first episode, Mike, you were like, as you were working on it, you were wondering if it was going to be straight to DVD. Like, you had no sense of the scope. And then, like, it became the surprise hit. For the second movie with twice the budget, you know, sort of cresting off the success of the first one, to then put that one to DVD, it's just like, it's weird.
I don't get it. But here's the thing. When it came out, I messaged a friend of mine who lives in Australia, and he's a huge action movie nut, loves John Wick, and he was like, dude, I'm so pissed off. They have not announced a release date. And I think they just released it last month, and he was like, oh my God, oh my God.
That's the same thing that we're there's a Cage movie that's been out in the UK since March that is going to be released here sometime in the fall. And I mean, it's not to the scope of John Wick Chapter 2, but like, Mike and I have been sitting here like, come on, like, let's get with it.
Which one is it?
Vengeance, a Love Story.
Oh, Don Johnson's in that, I believe.
Yep. Like, I get it. Like, that is much more of a VOD. Like, they knew it was probably going there in most markets. But it's weird. It is probably just a regional thing. I mean, I wonder sometimes about other countries in general, how much of the American market they actually get. There's a great joke in Flight of the Conchords where, like, their friend comes over from New Zealand and he just got The Matrix on VHS. You know, and it's like 2010 in America, and like, he doesn't even aware that there's sequels or anything. So I think that's like a long-standing joke as well, is like, just different countries don't get all of America's media like as soon as we do. Unfortunately, they have to like wait or never get it, or things like John Wick 2 will have to go straight to VOD.
That's what my friend Eric that I mentioned before, he lives in Bolivia. And he has lived there since the early 90s, and it used to be an agonizing wait for blockbusters to come down there. Like, a summer blockbuster in the early 90s would get there for Christmas. But now it's gotten to a point where it's usually day and date. But just recently, he was trying to watch all the Transformers movies, and then the new one didn't come out. And he's like, shit, I'm going to have to see it when I'm in the States. Happened to him last year on the last Star Trek. So it's volatile. But for some reason, John Wick 2 was out in Bolivia the same day it was out in the States. And he didn't go see it.
But that poor guy who spent 12 hours of his life watching the Transformers movies to watch the fifth one for some reason, and then...
Oh, trust me. He has not heard the end of that one.
Three other little tidbits about this movie. Common is back. We didn't mention this before. He was on another Keanu movie that Mike was a guest on. He was in Street Kings. So this
is a connection.
Number two, the DJ at the party in Rome is DJ Lee Castlevania. L.E. Castlevania, two
That's
words.
That's an amazing DJ name.
I call DJ Contra.
And he wrote music for both John Wick movies, which is cool.
Oh, cool.
The other thing is that at the end of the first movie, when John Wick kills Vigo, Vigo says, "Be seeing you, John." And so in this movie, Ruby Rose says it to him a couple times, I think, and he's like, you know, the first time he says, "Not if I see you first." And then after he kills her, she says it again, or she signs it again, and he just says, "Sure," like, "All right," like, whatever. Then I guess that's like, "I'll see you in hell," sort of, but like, "Be seeing you, John." And I think Common says it too when he gets stabbed, I think.
There's this obscure show called The Prisoner starring Patrick McGowan from like the 70s.
Sure.
Yeah, so yep. And that's a big catchphrase from there, "Be seeing you." And the idea behind that is they're all sort of retired secret agents that are too dangerous to be left in the world, so they've been collected on this mysterious island for the rest of their lives. And "Be seeing you" is sort of like the all-purpose, like, either have a nice day or go fuck yourself.
Yes.
There's so many good quotes in this movie. The one that I want to make sure that Mike puts the audio in for is the last bit of dialogue, maybe the entire movie. It's that after Ian McShane, after Winston excommunicates him from the Continental, it's not as over the top or as enthusiastic as his sort of, you know, shouting bit from the first movie. But he, you know, says, you know, basically, "I'm going to kill everybody."
"Winston. Tell them. Tell them all. Whoever comes, whoever it is, I'll kill them. I'll kill them all." "Of course you will."
Yeah, it's a great note to go out on. It's us, at least, like, I mean, until he starts running, I feel like he's going to be fine. But then he starts hearing all the phones go off and he starts running. And then I feel like maybe for the first time ever in his life, possibly, he might be a little freaked out about what's about to happen to him, right?
They went full Empire Strikes Back on that ending.
Which is like the ambiguity of like the dark ending there.
Yeah, same thing with The Dark Knight.
All right, so stay tuned for John Wick Chapter 3, starring way too many Ewoks. Mike Flynn, any other thoughts or notes or anything about John Wick Chapter 2?
No, just glad that I got to discuss this one with you
again,
that I've continued the John Wick journey.
And you'll be back for the third one whenever the third one comes out. I'm guessing probably 2019, 2020-ish, but we don't know. I mean, they've confirmed it, but who knows when it'll actually be out. Thank you for joining us on this Keanu journey, and we look forward to having you back for the third one.
Thank you. Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Mike Manzi, any last thoughts about John Wick Chapter 2?
I just want to say that I do really, 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 really like this movie. It's a really good sequel. You know, I brought up a couple things that bothered me, but I don't think by any means any of that breaks the movie. I'm one of the guys who falls in the camp of, I like the mythology. Yeah, maybe they went a little too deep, but what I got, I still enjoy it. I don't feel like any of it doesn't belong in the universe they're building, and I'm glad we got another one so soon, and I hope we get the third one, you know, within the same amount of time. I really just hope that they turn it out so people don't forget about John Wick. You know, it's like, let's keep John Wick in people's minds.
Exactly.
The final wrap-up is that, like, I think all three of us have made it clear that we like the first one better, but I ranked all the Keanu Reeves movies,
and this is
still in my top five. Like, John Wick, the only movie I think he's better in, or that's better suited for him than John Wick 1, is The Matrix. But here, like, John Wick Chapter 2, even though I don't like it as much as the first one, I still really love this movie. I just don't like it as much as Point Break or Flying.
And that's totally fair.
God, go see Flying. Just go see Flying. So for all things Keanu and all the movies that we just mentioned, you can go to cageclub.me or facebook.com/cageclub or at cageclubpod on Twitter. You can see all the episodes that we've done. You can see everything that Mike's done for Cage Club and Keanu Club. He's done a couple more of the next podcast we're doing starting December 1st, which we have not announced yet, but he'll be back, so you can go find his episodes. All sorts of fun, free things for you to go read and listen to and all sorts of stuff at those three places. I'm Joey Lewandowski.
And I'm Mike Manzi.
And that was Mike Flynn, and we'll see you next time on Keanu Club.
Consider this a professional courtesy.